You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, the EPA is trying to restrict a weed killer that might be linked to birth defects and cancer. We hear why some farm groups are pushing back against the potential regulation. First, growing research is indicating that loneliness may be linked to a host of health problems, including functional and cognitive decline and increased risk of heart disease and stroke. It's also a four-letter word in Western society that people can be ashamed to talk about. But our next guest says it's time to start taking loneliness for what it is, a public health problem that's hitting older adults especially hard. Carla Parisinoto joins us now. She's a geriatrician specializing in the care of older adults, and she began studying loneliness when she realized that there were other factors affecting her patients' health that weren't routinely being looked at in the medical field. Dr. Parisinoto, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, when did you first realize that it was time to start taking loneliness more seriously?
You know, it was probably during my residency training in late 2010, probably, that, you know, I had been taking care of older adults and realizing that, you know, we focus so much on medicine, on blood pressure and cholesterol and diabetes, and I was realizing that some of my patients weren't getting better despite controlling these things, and it made me think, you know, what else are we missing here? And so many of my older patients start to go through life transitions, you know, not working, loss of a spouse, et cetera, that I started thinking, you know, could there be things such as isolation and loneliness that are affecting them? And that's really how it started.
And did they share that with you, or was there reluctance at first to start talking about that?
There's absolutely a reluctance, I think, in a general sense. In general, anything related to mental health and personal feelings sometimes is still stigmatized, unfortunately. And so many people still feel uncomfortable talking about it. But what I found in my own practice is that when I started bringing up the topic, there were more people that I could imagine that were actually stating that they felt lonely. Even this weekend, I gave a talk in the community in San Francisco. And people in the audience, once they heard the topic, all of a sudden you hear these hands go up and saying, well, I feel lonely even though I'm married, or I live with my children and I still feel lonely. So I think once the conversation is opened, suddenly you start realizing that it's a bigger problem than we realize.
Well, that's really interesting that people are sharing stories of being lonely among other people. So then as a healthcare provider, you have to wonder, well, what do we do about this? You can't just give people someone to talk to and it's going to cure everything.
That's exactly right. And I think that's such an important point that I bring up with my patients. And even when I teach about this topic, or as I start to look at interventions and options, is that, you know, in my own research that I did, that more than half of people who reported feeling lonely were actually married. So again, showing that this is a complex problem. And you're exactly right. It's not as easy as telling someone, well, just go to a senior center. That may work for some people, but it's trying to figure out at the individual level, what is the lack in social relationship for that person, and how can we work with that person? So there's certainly, I think going forward, it's looking at what interventions on a greater scale do we have a general sense of knowing that they'll work, but then individualizing the treatment to say, okay, for this one person who I'm seeing, I know that what they really love is bridge, and they miss that. So how can I get them connected to that? So those are the different types of things to figure out. How can we reconnect people with other people, which frankly is changing a lot these days with technology, for good or bad.
You mentioned that some of these people, you know, they were married and they were still lonely. So it makes me wonder, what is the opposite of lonely? Do we know?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think, I wish I knew, but it's probably people that do feel connected most of the time. And I would say that, you know, loneliness, I think in a general sense, when you ask questions, there are people that may feel it here and there. But it's when you start feeling this on more days than not and more often than not that it really becomes a bigger problem. But I think the opposite sense is really truly someone who's feeling connected in different ways. But again, it's going to be variable by person, what that connection means and what that signifies.
And we touched a little on some of the health consequences that seem to be linked to loneliness. And tell us from your experience working with people what you see that you think loneliness might be a contributor to when it comes to some of these negative healthcare outcomes.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think, from my perspective as a geriatrician, one of the things that I care about the most And one of the things that my patients care the most about is maintaining independence and preserving function. So from a healthcare perspective, for me and what I see in my patients is that loneliness is, increases their risk of losing their independence. And ultimately, that has huge impact on someone's quality of life, and it actually has a lot of impact on healthcare dollars because of increased need for equipment or potential risk for nursing home admission. And then another research, there's more specific risks, such as increased risk of heart problems, increased risk of death from my own research, and we're starting to see a lot more as this problem is starting to take more be taken more seriously, and realizing that it's not something to be ignored.
We're talking with Dr. Carla Parisinotto right now. She's an associate professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and she specializes in the care of older adults, and she's also studied loneliness as an overlooked factor in patients' health. And we've been talking, Dr. Parisinotto, about older people, older adults here. But loneliness isn't something that specifically afflicts one age group. I imagine once you start looking, you'll see loneliness across the board.
That's exactly right. And I think I'm not as familiar with the research in younger adults, but certainly one of the questions we have as researchers is trying to figure out, we know that there's an increased risk of loneliness as we get older, but there are certainly people that have the risk younger or earlier in life, or there may be some folks that have an experience of quote-unquote chronic loneliness throughout their whole life. And I think some areas where we're looking for and need more answers is there a difference with this from this chronic loneliness across the lifespan versus episodic, something that comes and goes? And those are certainly some questions that we need answered that, you know, I'm hoping to be able to research in the future. The challenge, you know, is finding the research money to support this. And I'm hoping that as this becomes more of a truly public health problem that people are aware of, it will increase the probability that people will want to fund this type of research.
And I suppose being alone is unavoidable in life. Everyone is going to be alone at some point or another in their life, most likely. Do we know if there are ways to be alone, to be by yourself, that are nourishing and not necessarily lonely times?
Absolutely. And I think that is a great comment, and actually important to distinguish is that, you know, you can be alone and not feel lonely. You can just have one friend and not feel lonely, but it's for that individual person, what is the type of connection that they're missing or not missing that would make them feel lonely or not lonely? But still, it's about how you feel connected. Some people are perfectly fine being alone. And some of the upcoming research is really looking at kind of psychological or cognitive reserve to deal with some of these stressors of the loss of relationships or change in relationships as a coping mechanism.
So you've talked to a lot of your patients about that. What did they tell you about what happens in a life that makes it more lonely?
I think that there's, one, it's very humbling because there are times that I have forgotten to ask, and I feel very humbled when my patients have started telling me about this since it's getting more attention, so that's great. But I think a big part is, unfortunately, in our country, we still, and perhaps throughout the world, but I think more accentuated in the United States, is that there's still a great deal of ageism, such that some folks, as they get older, feel like they're becoming irrelevant and they're not sure how to belong and where their place in society is, perhaps especially with the changes in retirement and, you know, the loss of a spouse is certainly a big one, or even caregiving for a spouse who may have cognitive impairment. So those are probably some of the biggest things that I'm seeing amongst my patients. But, you know, I have a woman I talk about sometimes who said she used to love working in retail. And when she retired, that was a big change in her social circle and really what was making her feel lonely. So we actually worked together to find a place for her to volunteer doing some retail at a local store. And so that was really fulfilling for her and actually made a big, big difference in her feelings of loneliness. So that's the kind of the individualized interventions that you have to do once in a while.
So it is an individual thing, right? You can't just write out a prescription that takes away loneliness. You probably have to figure out what it is for each person that's going to connect them.
I think that's right. That being said, I think similarly to how we treat blood pressure, there may be five different medications that you know can work, and it's trying to figure out which one, but it's knowing which ones are going to work or what their options are that are first, which is why, you know, going forward, we need large-scale studies to look at different types of interventions to have a sense. Well, in general, we know, let's say, phone support systems like the Silver Line in the United Kingdom will work, but then it's trying to figure out for that individual person, is that the right intervention? So it's a little bit of both, finding large-scale proof, but then individualizing, which really is what medicine is coming to these days, is moving the evidence-based medicine into individualized care and care that's patient-centered, that a person says, this is how I want my healthcare to be moving forward.
And you mentioned that Silver Line, it was a hotline in England, I guess, where people can call up and just talk
exactly.
If they're feeling lonely. Do we have anything like that here?
So we do. There is a, and nationally, it's plus or minus where things are. We have a hotline here in San Francisco called the Friendship Line, which is specifically for older adults, which is very exciting. And interestingly, it's become so popular that we get calls or they get calls from across the United States at times as well. And what's exciting about that program is that, it's specific towards older adults, and people can call it any time. Or for people who live locally, what some of the volunteers do will arrange and say, for Miss Smith, I'm going to call her every Wednesday to check in. And it's a way to make sure that someone's still there, that they're healthy, that they're feeling connected, and so that they're not feeling marginalized and ignored.
Dr. Carla Parisinoto stays with us. She is an associate professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and she specializes in the care of older adults, and she looks particularly these days at loneliness as sometimes an overlooked factor in her patients' health. And we want to know what you think. Why do you think loneliness can be so hard to talk about? And why have we not looked at it more carefully as a component of good health, maybe until now? And do you think it does? Has it impacted your health, being lonely maybe, or maybe the health of a loved one and an older family member? And what do you think we can do to open up dialogue about loneliness, especially among older adults? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll pick up our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Dr. Carla Parisinoto is with us. She works with older adults at the University of California, San Francisco, and one of her specialties is taking a look at loneliness as an overlooked factor in patients' overall health. By some measures, there is an epidemic of loneliness going on, and it does seem to hit older adults especially hard, but it can be felt by anybody at any age, at any time in their life. And we want to know what you think. Have you gone through a particularly lonely time in your life? Did you come out of it? What did you do, and how did you help yourself connect again? Or is there an older family member who you think may be lonely now? What can we do to reach out to people and open up this dialogue about loneliness? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll take our first caller now. We've got Joseph with us in Madison. Joseph, hi.
Hello. Yes, I started listening to the program. Interesting, because it's something that I've dealt with for years. I'm 62 years old now. I think that the first time I really started feeling extremely lonely was when I was about 4. Mm. And I look back and I think that, you know, maybe that had something to do with the divorce of my mother and father, which back in that day was not common. But ever since then, as I, you know, went through high school, I was very popular. I had a lot of friends, you know, and I was in sports, and But I was always very, very lonely when it came down to it. I remember walking down the street when I was probably in my early 20s, just walking down the street and just crying. I was just extremely lonely. I don't know how to explain it, but lonely, you know, definitely has a part and has had a part in my life. I have a full family now. I have 5 children, but it's odd that I still experience almost like an aloneness that I wish wasn't there. Hmm. I kind of remove myself. I wish I didn't do that, but I don't know how to keep myself around the others that I'm with. So that's my experience. It's something that I know a lot about. I've experienced it for years.
Joseph, thank you so much for sharing that. You really painted a portrait of your life and what you've been going through, and also busting some myths that you can have a full family around you, five children, and still feel this separateness, this aloneness. And Dr. Parasinoto, where would you start with Joseph?
Yeah, no, I would say, Joseph, thank you for sharing your story. And I think hearing things like what you've experienced are important for everyone to hear about. I think so people realize they're, it's funny to say, but not alone in these feelings, and that other people feel this way too. And exactly, even with a fulfilling life with this, that's important to acknowledge, that it can be even when you have a family and friends. I would say, you know, it's worth delving into a little bit further with your physician or healthcare provider, anyone else you trust, to see are there different things that you should be doing that you think that would help you to connect. You know, one of the things in the psychological literature are how do we build our resilience towards these feelings? And I don't have the answers, because this is an area that we're still working on. But again, I think the more we start opening up this discussion, we're moving the conversation forward and hoping that, you know, we can potentially find things for people like you that could help ameliorate those feelings that can be quite distressful.
Well, Joseph, thank you. I'm really glad that you called and shared that today. And we'll go next to Megan in Cambridge. Megan, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I had a question. I'm a caregiver, and I'm also a social work major. And I work with older adults. And I found that in the process of when they get Alzheimer's, usually very prominently, it seems like the care tapers off from involving them in community.
Yep, yep.
It's unfortunate, because I found that a lot of them do hunger for community. Like, you can tell in their conversation.
Megan.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead. No, that's a really great comment, and thank you so much for sharing that. And I think one of the things that we know in cognitive impairment in terms of development of dementia, one of the things that can be protective is actually socialization. So it kind of goes both ways in terms of helping to prevent the dementia, the Alzheimer's, from starting. But you're absolutely right. It's this lack of integration of folks with dementia into the rest of the community. And, you know, underlying this, our treatment of older adults, whether with loneliness or with other things, is how do we view older adults in our society, and are we integrating them, are we marginalizing them, and are we contributing to feelings of loneliness by not focusing or creating a focus on the care of older adults and integration in society?
And there's more to talk about there, and I thank you so much for your call, Megan. I want to make sure we get to our next caller. We're going to go to Eric in Madison. Eric, hi. Are you there?
Yep. Yeah, I'm here. Hi. Yeah, so I actually work at this place called Solstice House, which is in Madison. And we have a warm line, which is like a hotline, but people can call and pretty much talk about anything they need support with. And we serve all of Wisconsin, actually. So,
okay, so it's called a warm line, Eric, and anyone can call and talk about anything. Can you share the number with us?
Yeah. The number is area code 608-244-5077. So
608-244-5077 is the number,
yeah,
for the warm line. And
yeah,
Eric, have you had some good conversations there?
People generally seem to having a place to talk with, and we're open 24/7 every day of the year too. So definitely had some interesting conversations, and there have been some people who've maybe not had much other support, and so, but.
Great. Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us, Eric. Appreciate that. And we've got that number. We'll go next to Mary for another call, a quick call maybe, in West Bend. Mary, hi.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I have been dealing with cancer, and my family has just won't interact with me at all since I've had cancer, and my friends. And I don't talk about the cancer to make them uncomfortable, and I've never asked my family for anything. They're very wealthy, and they have time, although cancer and disease, like old age, I believe, makes people feel very uncomfortable. And it has nothing to do with the patient. It has to do with their comfort level. When they're very wealthy and living in a bubble, they don't want to see somebody who has, you know, maybe my hair falling out or dark circles under my eyes, or I can't walk maybe in a day, or, you know, I'm skinny.
Mary, thank you. And I want to jump in so we can make sure to get Dr. Parasinota's response to you. And I thank you for calling and sharing. And I'm sorry for what you're going through with your illness and your family. And I wish you well. And Dr. Parasinota, what would you say to Mary about being isolated like that when she is going through a difficult time and could use that support?
Yeah, no, it's so hard to hear that experience. But I think, as she's already saying, it's not about the patient in this case. It's about you know, the families and our society's ability to cope with some of these difficult situations. It's you know, that's unfortunately a really challenging thing as we face our own mortality and our own fears about illness. And I think that's one of the reasons why, for example, people feel afraid to talk about loneliness, because for some it may feel too close, or it's the fear of not knowing how to respond. And again, by having these open conversations like you're holding on your show today, it's trying to create a safer environment to start talking about this so that it is more normalized, in a sense, and not saying that it's normal, but that it's okay to talk about and that you should be getting support. And I would urge you, mm-hmm. though it's not your family, to think about, if it works for you, to think about the different cancer support networks that are around. But clearly, it doesn't always supplement family, but it may be a thing to
have. And we're out of time, Dr. Parasinota. Thank you for joining us. That was Carla Parasinota, geriatrician and associate professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. You're listening to Central Time.